kid and Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run.
Welcome to episode 3 of the Dad's Army podcast. Today is Saturday, the 16th of June 2007, and over the next 20 minutes or so, we're going to be discussing all that's new in a Dad's Army world, and we have one particular really big announcement to make, so I'm quite looking forward to discussing that with Tony when he joins us. We'll go through the other news items, of which there are a few this week, and later on we'll be discussing our featured episode, which is the very first Dad's Army episode ever made and ever broadcast, The Man and the Hour. I'm joined now by my good friend Tony. Morning, Tony. How you doing?
Good morning, James. I'm fine. How are you?
Yep, a lot better than when we were recording episode 2 of the podcast when I had a fairly heavy cold. Yes. So yeah, I'm much better, thank you. Moving straight into our news news bag, there's about 4 items of news I think we can discuss this week. First of all is a rather important announcement, which I referred to briefly in the introduction to this episode. But next podcast, we'll have a 10-minute interview with Ed O'Driscoll, who is the Managing Director of Caliber Productions, the production company who's bringing Dad's Army back to the stage this autumn. So I have to say, it's a really exciting announcement, and I'm really looking forward to hearing what you, the listeners, have to say about the interview. But exciting news, eh, Tony?
Yep, we're still looking forward to this play coming onto the stage. Absolutely.
Yep, I'm very much looking forward to actually going to see it now, particularly having spoken to Ed. I mean, I'll make you jealous now, but I actually interviewed Ed yesterday, so I have I've already had the conversation, and what came across is his passion and drive for the series, for the original series, and it's absolutely passionate about making certain that the new production is as true to the original as possible, and all it's done really is really made me more excited about seeing the play.
Did you manage to get a ticket or two?
I was there to find out what he thought about the play and all of his feelings and how it came together. Not to try and blag a couple of tickets, but nice. I'm glad I interviewed him now rather than you, Tony. Anyway, hopefully that interview will be ready. There's a few little bits of post-production I need to do before it's ready to go onto a podcast, and hopefully it will be ready to download the middle of this week or perhaps towards the end of this week. Anyway, what else have we got in the news bag, Tony?
There's a youngster who's made the headlines in the Sun newspaper this week. I'll just read the quick article. Kid is Barmy for Dad's Army. What have we got? We've got a schoolboy has built a shrine to the hit BBC One comedy Dad's Army in his garden shed. Darren Stride, 15, displays photos of Tellys, Captain Mannering and co, plus 1940s newsreels, gas masks and even Winston Churchill's autograph in his mini museum. Darren from scrappy Norfolk got hooked on the show aged 6. He said, "I love it. It's taken over my life. I have all their autographs." so that's a young chap in the Sun this week.
Yeah, it's quite rare, really, isn't it, to come across someone who got into Dad's Army so young. Do you know, I'm absolutely certain his parents must have had something to do with it.
My nephew, aged roughly 10, is quite keen on Dad's Army as well, so it does appeal to young and old.
No, I think that's part of the beauty of the show, really, is that you've got people who have grown up with it, who are avid fans of the show, and there are kids as well who either end up getting roped into watching it by their parents, and then of course actually become fans in their own right. And I think it's because the characters are so warm and they're so accessible, even for young children. I remember. Did you remember, Tony, when we went to Dad's Army Day the last couple of years now? Pamela Cundall, in particular, has been fantastic with the kids and the youngsters. So
she tries to spoil one or two of them, I think. She tries to make them feel special, I think.
Which I think is wonderful, though, given that it's such an old show. I mean, the last time this show went out was 30 years ago, and it's great that there's a connection with young kids. I'm not quite sure how I'd feel about my shed being turned into a 1940s shrine, really. But it's it's great that he's got such a healthy obsession as opposed to something that you hear about far more regularly in the news, which is kids getting involved in far more dubious activities rather than collecting wartime memorabilia. I mean, how old were you, Tom, when you got into Dad's Army? Were you really young as well, or were you a later convert?
I think I was probably about 30.
30, right, okay.
Just go back a step, though. I've been to your house. Where's your shed?
I don't have a shed where we are at the moment. why would you want to know where my shed is?
Well, you just said you wouldn't want your shed.
I wouldn't.
I'm thinking, well, you'd be lucky to have one, actually. But.
Well, I wouldn't want a shed. I wouldn't want a shed. If I did have a shed, I wouldn't fill it with Dad's Army memorabilia, I can assure you.
James, I apologise.
I think it's great that with, Dad's Army again, he's making the news, and it might possibly be a little bit off the back of the massive national press interest that the stage play got. I mean, this was actually published on the 1st of June, which was the day after we published episode 2 of the podcast. So it was a shame, really. It's a little bit old news now. But perhaps, you know, it's great to see Dad's Army in the national news again.
Yeah. They were trying to, the stage play people were trying to time their announcement to fit in with episode our second podcast, but they just couldn't quite get it together in time, so it just came out a day later.
You think so, do you? Yeah. Okay. Moving on. The other thing I wanted to have a brief discussion about was something we touched on briefly in the last episode, and that's the Dad's Army Appreciation Society website. And I mean, we mentioned briefly there was a virus, and it seems to be pertinent to users who go to that website using Internet Explorer. Now, there's a couple of forums that are discussing this in some detail, and some people are saying, well, actually, it's better. It seemed to disappear for a couple of days, and then others have gone back onto the forum and posted messages to say that it's taken down their computer. And I have to say that I went onto the website yesterday, and it completely crashed my computer. I had to start all over again. Have you had any problems with this, Tone, or do you know anything more about it?
No, we mentioned this last time, and to be honest, I'm waiting for you to say it's all clear before perhaps I have another go on it. I would just say, obviously, it is a fantastic website, and we hope they manage to clear it quite soon. And obviously, we'll say here, won't we, as soon as we know it's all okay again.
It would be good, certainly. I mean, it always was a good reference site, but it's been like this since before the last Bressingham event. So it would be really good to see some kind of movement on that. And perhaps I'll try and contact the Dad's Army Appreciation Society to see if they've got anything we can report on in a future podcast.
Yeah.
A few other bits and pieces that you may be interested in. This is the last news item, if you like, and it's just to give you a rough idea of how this podcast is doing. I mean, we're 3 episodes in now, and clearly neither Tony or I are professional. You can probably tell that quite easily.
Speak for yourself.
I mean, we are just both fans of the show, and we had absolutely no idea how well or how badly this podcast would do. I think, Tony, you thought that no one had listened to us.
No one usually listens to me.
So, no, I know what you mean. but there's just to let you know, we've actually got, I mean, since we published episode 2 weeks ago, we've had nearly 200 downloads of episode 2. Now, it doesn't mean that everybody's listening to every word we're saying, I suppose, but it's also quite interesting to know whereabouts people are listening to us.
Please read out a few.
Shall I tell you a few of the countries?
I think you're about to anyway. Thank
I will
God.
Do, certainly,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The majority of which is certainly the UK. We've had, I think, just over a half of our listeners are based in the UK. However, we've got about 7 or 8 people who listen to us from North America, all different parts. California seems to be quite a popular place. So if you're based in California and you're listening, perhaps you can send us an email. Tell us what you think of the show. We've also got a number of listeners in Australia and New Zealand, which is amazing. I mean, I know Dad's Army was strong in Australia and New Zealand a long time ago, but it's great to have people who are downloading the show. The most interesting place, or the biggest surprise, I would say, is that we've had 3 downloads from Saudi Arabia. Is Dad's
probably clicked on the button by mistake?
is Dad's Army big in Saudi Arabia, as far as you know, Tony?
I doubt it.
No? Oh, well, there's
probably bigger in Saudi Arabia than in Germany, though.
Yeah, well. There's also...
We're still waiting for our first listener in Germany, aren't we?
No, we've got a couple in Germany, believe it or not. And we've also had a couple from Portugal, so I wonder whether or not that's Clive Dunn listening to us there.
Yes.
Possible.
Yeah, I've got off.
That would be great. Anyway, I think that just about wraps up the news item. As I said, there was a few items to discuss this week. And unless you have anything else, Tony, any other announcements or news items, we'll move into our discussion on our featured episode this week.
Yeah, let's do the episode.
Do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler?
Excuse me. Mr. Mannering would rather like to have your rifle.
Who would like to have it?
Captain Mannering.
But he can't have it.
Not here, Godfrey. Hand over that gun at once.
I don't see why I should.
Are you refusing to obey an order on active service? Realize we can have you shot for this.
That'll be a bit tricky since he's the only one with a gun.
Well, that was a little part of the very first episode of Dad's Army called The Man and the Hour. So the very first episode of Series 1. Slightly unusual. Obviously, it's in black and white, which I think the first couple of series of episodes are in black and white. But this one starts off with not a flashback, but it starts off with a flash forward, which is showing the platoon after the war is finished and after the home guard duties are finished. And it's got, obviously, Captain Mannering and his I'm Back in Britain campaign when the war's finished. And I think rationing is still having some effect. And so it starts off with a flash forward, but then straight into the very first piece of Dad's Army history.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the only Dad's Army episode that I'm aware of with a pre-credit sequence, which is a little bit before or ahead of its time. I mean, you think of all of the common dramas today, and they've all got pre-credit sequences. Well, a lot of them have. Star Trek is the most obvious one, I think. So,
James, if I was to mention one other episode of Dad's Army that's got something like this in it, can you think of the one I'm thinking of?
No.
What I'm picturing is a scene in the House of Commons. Does that ring any bells with you?
I'm desperately trying to think of what you're after, but no, I can't.
Okay, well, all I will say is that I confidently say there is another one of the 80-odd episodes that starts off with a little sequence like this.
It's not the movie, is it?
No, it is one of the episodes, but it starts off with a sequence in the House of Commons where they're discussing a very important issue.
And it was actually before the credit sequence?
I think so. I'll have to find out one now.
I think you're wrong. I don't think there is one. No. But if you're right, then we'll certainly address it. But I can't think of it at all. But
we'll check my facts.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Okay. What I do think is interesting about this particular pre-credit sequence is that you've got all of the characters. So obviously, if you're watching this for the first time, you've yet to meet and get to know, and they're all grown up. Even Pike. He's there, and he's got a moustache.
Moustache, yeah.
you notice that, clearly.
Yep.
Walker.
Well, it's the bit about Walker, that's the poignant thing, because obviously he's died before Dad's Army's even finished. James Beck, the actor, has died before Dad's Army is finished. But here, you're actually seeing him after the final episode of Dad's Army, so quite strange.
Yes, it's I think it's a really good little sequence, I have to say. But did you notice, talking about Walker there, he had no moustache, whereas he's normally got... So they've swapped. In other words, Walker gave Pike his moustache. maybe they only had one prop for a moustache.
This was the first episode, and their budget did go up as the series went along. When the BBC realised how popular it was becoming, they did get bigger budgets.
No, that's interesting. Of course, if you look at the original viewing figures, this was... first of all, this was broadcast on the 31st of July 1968, so television audiences were much higher than they are today anyway. But the original viewing figure was 7.2 million. And for a programme today to attract that level of viewers would be seen to be incredibly successful.
Yeah.
So, you know, it does show... I mean, people were a nation of television watchers far more in the 60s and 70s than they are now. One other thing I found quite interesting about the opening of this, not necessarily about the pre-credit sequence, but the actual credits themselves, is that you've got the audience laughing over the top.
I've seen that recently, and I'm watching it and I'm not finding it funny. But they're laughing at these arrows moving across the screen, aren't they? The famous arrows.
I do you appreciate though what's funny? Imagine if you hadn't seen it ever. It was the very first time you'd ever seen it.
It sounds canned.
You think? Do you know? Maybe it is. I'm not sure, but I can look at it because obviously the black and white credit titles were slightly different to the colour ones. I think if you were seeing that for the first time, it looks like, you know, Britain is expanding out into Europe, and all of a sudden the slightest movement of the Nazi war machine, and the arrows disappear, the trails behind the arrows disappear, and we're back in Britain just pointing away, and I pointing away at the or stabbing away at the Nazi arrows. So I think if you haven't seen it, and because Dad's Army title sequence is so iconic now and people are so familiar with it, perhaps we can't see what's funny, but I think it probably was quite funny originally. Maybe, I'm not so sure. Anything else about this, the early parts of this episode, Tony, that you noticed?
In the early part of the first episode, I think the writers and producers are trying to set the scene and introduce the characters gradually. Mm. So, if I'm honest, there is the humour all the way through, as always with all of the episodes, but they are setting the characters here, setting the scene. Mm. The best moments don't come right at the start, I suppose. You need to give the actors the characters a chance to be introduced, and you see how they're placed in the episode. Mm.
No, I think it's true of any series at the beginning. It's there's a degree of establishing the characters, and I think they do that very well. And it's not... I don't think humour or comedy is always the best way of doing that. And I think the whole of this episode, and to an extent, the whole of the first series of Dad's Army, is much more serious than subsequent series. You know, it's the others are out and out comedies. The vast majority of them are based purely on humour. Whereas, you know, even the part shortly after the credits, whereby you've got the the television screen, you know, and you've got the guy talking over, you know, like it was a newsreel.
Yes.
There's a degree of a seriousness about when this comedy or when this drama is set, because it's got pictures of tanks. From what I understand, those tanks are not actually World War II tanks. They come a lot afterwards. But the whole impression of that particular sequence is to try and make you think, well, this is set in wartime, you know. Yeah. And it's wasn't immediately the funniest thing ever. So.
Absolutely, they've made some of the news items, some of the news reel things that you're looking at. Some of them are genuine, and some of them are made up.
Yeah. I think it works really well, as you know, when you're just watching it, you can't tell which ones is genuine, which ones are specially recorded. So I think it's done really well, and I think they did that newsreel a little bit. Almost, was it every single episode in the first series? It may have been, you know.
Ooh, Don't know.
Can't remember.
Should know. Can't remember offhand.
Well, no, me neither.
This episode is the first time they mention Thetford, or the first and possibly the only time they mention Thetford.
All right.
And when they're loading up the sandbags in the bank manager's office, and they refer to Mrs. Hoskins, who's phoning her sister in Thetford.
Oh, you're so quite right.
So yeah. They've given credit to Thetford there, which is obviously where they, most people know, is where they filmed a lot of the outside scenes.
Do you know, that's interesting, because I wonder whether that was deliberate, because this was the very first episode, wasn't it? I mean, I'm assuming, and this is a big assumption, that they recorded in order those days, and they recorded the episodes in order. I know that's very uncommon these days with TV, but I wonder whether they'd actually spent that much time in Thetford at that point, because it was the first episode in the first series. They went to Thetford again and again and again throughout a 9-year run. But maybe you're right, maybe they knew they were going to be in Thetford, so therefore they decided to name drop it into the...
I reckon they just planned ahead a bit, probably more than we've planned ahead with our podcast, but I reckon they did plan ahead a bit more.
Maybe you're right. There's a couple of interesting things here. I mean, these are minor points, really, but things that I find interesting. There was a point where Mannerin asked Wilson what he was doing in World War One. You remember
Ashendale, Gallipoli, and Mannerin wants to shut him up.
Yes, that's it. He
doesn't want to hear it after he's asked to realise there's a bit of a list coming. doesn't want to hear it.
Yeah, that's it. I think you're quite right. But Wilson does say he was a sergeant in those places that you mentioned. However, if you fast forward right until the episode we discussed briefly last podcast, in Never Too Old, he's a captain. And he turns up in a captain's uniform. And he said he was a captain in World War One. Do you remember that?
Did we discuss Never Too Old?
Very briefly, because we talked about Series 9's release.
Okay.
There's an anomaly there. Between the very first episode ever and the very last episode ever. Had you noticed that?
No.
Okay. the other thing, there's a couple of other areas here I think are interesting. I quite like the character of Miss King. I thought she was quite good. Pike's colleague.
Yes.
Within the bank. She featured. I mean, the actress here was Caroline Dowdeswell, and I'm not quite sure what else she's been in, but she featured on and off throughout the whole of the first series. I'm not too sure if her contract was extended into the second series, but there's a couple of conversations.
I could look her up in my A to Z.
Your A to Z.
A bit about Miss King, obviously introducing the speech by Anthony Eden on the radio. Sorry to keep going on about the radio plays, but in the radio play version of this episode, they all toddle off to Elliot's radio store.
They do.
To the broadcast. And I think that's even better than just switching on the radio in the bank.
Quite right. They recycled it, not only for the radio show. In the radio show, Timothy Bateson played Elliot. I'm not quite sure who played the character in the film, because they did these scenes again, and then they went straight over to the radio store within the film. So you've got two different versions of how they listened to Anthony Eden's broadcast.
I love it because Mannering is just so rude to the radio store manager, presumably Mr. Elliot. He's just so completely rude to the man. He says, "Oh, you shut up."
Yes.
it's outrageously rude. And if you didn't know better, you would actually think Mannering was a rather unpleasant individual.
Well, he can be. It can be. He's an absolute inherent snob throughout the entire series. He actually strives to be a snob, but he's not really that upper class himself, so he can't always... Which a lot of comedy is made of that dichotomy. Going back to Miss King, I mean, as I said, I thought she'd come up with she had quite a number of good conversations with Pike throughout the early stages of Dad's Army, and it was a shame that she went. She was referred to many times in later series, but she never actually featured other than the first couple of episodes. Bracewell, of course, he was the character who disappeared. We mentioned him again in other podcasts. John Ringham was the actor. Do you know, he's the first other the first minor, if you like, cast member, aside from Mannerin, Wilson and Pike, to actually get a line. He's the first out of all. He's before Fraser, Pike, Godfrey, Walker, all of the others. So he clearly was in Jimmy Perry's and David Croft's minds, you know, as a regular character at this stage.
Do we know the reason why he didn't carry on in further episodes?
I think it was just a case of one too many. I'm not sure there's ever been a definitive explanation, and if there has been, it's passed me by. But I think it was just one character too many. There was eight people there, or eight main characters, including him, and someone had to go. What did you think of his character, Tony?
He's made out in this episode to be. Well, actually, Godfrey takes over his character in many ways, really, as being a sort of rather weak man, I think. Hmm. I think they probably made the right decision.
Okay.
Not carrying on with him, is what I'm trying to say.
Hmm. I'd like to have seen how he could have developed, perhaps. You know, over future episodes. But again, I think I'd have thought that about any character that would have only come in, you know, for a few episodes right at the beginning. So
you don't get the chance to learn his character, obviously, do you?
Not really.
So he might have had a character all of his own, but we never get to find out.
What did you think of Fraser in this episode?
What's Fraser up to in this episode?
Well, when he first meets Mannerin, this is the first time, he says he owns a philatelist's shop, which is stamp collecting, I think.
Yes.
If I'm not wrong.
Yes.
which
keeps the philatelist shop, yes.
Yes, which I don't know, there's an argument here. Either he tells a porcupine, because he doesn't want to say that he's an undertaker, which somehow doesn't sit with Fraser's character, or they decided later on that Fraser would be a lot better as an undertaker than a stamp collector.
I go with the latter there. I think the writers just decided that there was more humour, more mileage in a few.
So they just changed it.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Fraser says, "I keep a philatelist shop." Mannering says, "How do you spell that? S-H-O-P."
Indeed, that's very good. There's two major things in this episode that I like, and I'm realising we've been talking for some time now, so we'll begin to wind up. But Mannerin's enthusiasm for the Home Guard comes across here incredibly well, and that's something I think remained consistent throughout the entire series. I think his motivation for why he was so enthusiastic changed. Episode 1 shows him to be, or this episode, A Man in the Hour, shows him to be an incredible patriot, and that he really wants to be, you know, serving his country. Towards the end, it's like he's so desperate for status. You know,
do you mean the end of series 9 from the start?
Yes, I do. Sorry. Towards the end, it's, you know, he likes the status far more than he likes being a patriot, and one almost serves the other. He can gain status by being enthusiastic about the Home Guard and the way that he leads it, which is why I think he makes so many bumbling decisions and is so keen to claim credit wherever it's due, or wherever it's possible.
I think despite all of his flaws, I think sometimes you need people like that, even in life. Just the fact that if he hadn't have done it in this series, mm. Who would have led the Home Guard?
Very, very, very true. The speeches that I like is that he's got two main speeches. One where he's been thrown out the hall, or just after he's been thrown out the hall by Hodges, which is also his first appearance here. He says, you know, come back in an hour with anything that you've got, you know, pitching forks, knives, golf clubs, whatever. He says, we British here, after getting all wrong with Fraser being, you know, English and Scottish. Yeah, he inspires the men, and also the very last speech at the end of the episode, which I think was a great way to do it, which was, come on, Adolf, do your damnedest, you know, which is great. So it mixed, I think, a very comic situation, you know, i.e. the Home Guard in wartime, and they balanced it quite well without actually upsetting or trivialising the war or the Home Guard. And I think it worked. I've got to say, I mean, one of my favourite episodes, certainly within the top five, or my top five. What would you give this out of five, Tony?
Out of five. It's got a disadvantage because it is the very first episode and they are trying to introduce people, so it has a hard task here, but taking that into account, I think I have to give it a 4 out of 5.
Yep, I'm going to be very boring and agree with you. I would say it's not perfect, but it's one that I can watch over and over again and think how well the characters were formed inside that first 30 minutes, and I think it was terrific. So, okay, right, that just about wraps up our conversation about The Man and the Hour. If you've got any comments about what Tony and I have said, then please email them to us, either at warmingtononsea at 333... beg your pardon, warmingtononsea 333 at yahoo.co.uk or at permissiontowrite at yahoo.co.uk.
Mr. Brown goes off to town on the A21, but he comes home each evening and he's ready with...
That's the end of this week's, or this fortnight's podcast, I should say. We have got a special, as has already been mentioned. We've got James's interview with Ed O'Driscoll, who's doing the Dad's Army stage play. There's a sort of special treat there. That should be ready on the internet by this time next week, possibly a day or two earlier. And for the podcast after that, probably in about 2 weeks' time, we'll be looking at the episode The Battle of Godfrey's Cottage. And if I could just leave James now to leave our contact details with you.
Yep, certainly. If you'd like to take a look at our website, that's www.dadsarmy.podomatic.com. If you'd like to get in contact with us, then I've already mentioned our email address, but once more, it's warmingtononsea333@yahoo.co.uk. On our website, we've got details of the tour dates of the Dad's Army stage play, and I will, after this episode gets published, put the link onto Caliber Productions' website, of which Ed O'Driscoll is the managing director, and you can hear the interview in the special podcast, which will be released in a week's or so's time. So, unless there's anything else, Tony, then I think we'll wrap up this episode for this week, and we'll speak to you all again in a couple of weeks' time.